I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. Once again, I'm joined by the award-winning journalist Sean Holman. He's one of the most highly respected journalists amongst journalists in Victoria. Covering the legislature, he's the editor of Public Eye Online, a must-read for anyone following BC politics. PublicEyeOnline.com is the website where one can read the articles he writes, as well as stream video clips from scrums and interviews. Mr. Holman also hosts Public Eye Radio, Sundays 8 to 10 a.m. on CFAX. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Sean Holman. Good morning, Mr. Holman.
Good morning, Joe. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Yourself?
I'm doing just grand. Thanks for asking.
I understand that since we last talked during the campaign, you've recently married. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'm quite happy about that, actually. It would be a problem if I wasn't, but I feel like I'm a very lucky guy.
And I also read here that you teach at UVic now?
Yes, I'm teaching journalism up at UVic right now, Journalism 215, teaching a whole bunch of students, 45 to be exact. How to go out in the world and be little muckrakers. So hopefully all those who are staffing public institutions will be shaking in their boots now.
Is that fun? Do you enjoy doing that?
I do, absolutely. You know, it's lonely being a muckraking journalist. It's lonely being an investigative journalist. So I build the courses, Writing 215, Changing the World. And I hope some of my students will be inspired to take up the standard of being an investigative journalist and join me.
Who inspired you growing up?
Well, I think it's a number of different things, actually. I suppose my parents were always pushing me to question what people told me, question authority. I think one of my school principals called me a free thinker at one point, and that was really reinforced by the fact that I wasn't really on the ins with anyone when I was growing up. I was on the outs with most of the social cliques at school, and my teachers didn't like me too much either, because I had a tendency to question them. So all of that in combination kind of ended up leading me, I think, to the path of reporting, where I get to hold the teachers and the cliques responsible for their actions, in a way.
Now, do you think that the sort of lack of investigative journalism, not only in our community, but throughout the media, throughout the continent, do you think that's a symptom of the state of the media? Or is that the consumer out there is just not interested in that sort of stuff? They'd rather read about John and Kate or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a troubling question because I'm not sure what the answer is to it. I think there's a number of things to say about that. Number one, even if the media wanted to do more investigative journalism, it doesn't really have the resources to do more investigative journalism. At least they don't, given the fact that they also want to cover the story of the day at the same time. You know, the plane crash, the speech in the House of Commons, the latest announcement from whatever public or private institution has thrown out a news release. So the way in which they've structured themselves, their priorities, and a lack of resources, I think makes it difficult for investigative journalism to come out. In addition, I think that there are a lot of journalists, not all journalists, of course, but I think a lot of journalists get into journalism for the wrong reason. They either like the practice of it, i.e., you know, they like, you know, interviewing people or researching or whatever, right? Or they like sort of the cheap fame associated with it, seeing their name in print, being on the radio, being on TV. I don't think we have enough people who are concerned about the purpose of journalism, and that is holding public institutions to account. That's the purpose of journalism. Everything else is gravy. And I'm really concerned that we don't have enough of those those kind of minds, people with that kind of approach who are in the media. But even then, even if we did, let's say we had that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say we also had news organizations with the resources to do proper investigative journalism and also structured their newsrooms so that investigative journalism was possible, the question still remains, would there be a demand for it? Does the public actually want that? And I don't know. I was having a conversation with Harvey Oberfeld just recently, former BCTV news reporter, and you know, he was making a point to me, and I think this is a very good one, is that, you know, the media has not really gotten slapped around by the audience much for their lack of holding public institutions to account. People still watch them, you know. Audiences, you know, continue in a lot of cases to grow. Now, you know, they're still in financial trouble, but you know, they're not really being given any incentive by the public to change. The public isn't really, you know, packing up their bags and going elsewhere. As long, and there are to a certain extent alternative media outlets, but as long as the big media, the mainstream media, the wreckage of it, is clogging up these huge big content distribution pipes that they still own, I think it's going to make it very difficult for there to be an alternative that emerges and an alternative that perhaps takes more serious focus on investigative journalism.
Let's take an issue here now, the HST and the talk of that. Is it your sense that the people are really upset by this? I mean, there have been protests, but it doesn't seem that a lot of the chatter, you know, it comes from those who are opposed to it, who are perhaps organizers, people like Thielman and Van Der Zandt and the sort.
I think what we're seeing is the fact that government is raw and exposed right now. So anything that they do wrong, the public perceives as wrong. There's no cushion for that anger anymore. Not the kind of cushion that previously existed. So I think, in part, that's what this is more about. Yes, I think people are angry about HST, but I think they're angry about a lot of things, and HST is simply the most visible among them. You know, what they're really angry about is the government in general, I think, and you know, the overall approach that it's taken on a whole range of issues, the HST, as I say, only being the most visible.
How do you reconcile this anger that people have towards the government with the fact that we had an election not so long ago, and the government seemed to have been returned?
Yeah.
And then turnout itself, I mean, that's another thing we can look at, was not as high as it could have been.
Well, and I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that British Columbians are pretty disenchanted with the options, and I would argue pretty disenchanted with the system. You know, heck, I'm even disenchanted with the system. You take a look at what goes on at the provincial legislature, where is the debate? Where is the democracy? We might as well have two people in the legislature, Carol James, Gordon Campbell, one person able to do whatever he wants, one person able to do nothing at all, because that's what it pretty much comes down to. We don't have, you know, party members, really, for the most part, MLAs, stepping out of line, being willing to stand up for their own party, vote for the other side. They like an idea. We don't have any of that happening, you know, and I think that's a real detriment. So yeah, this government got reelected, but under a system completely lacks credibility and facing an opposition that also has credibility problems. So, you know, I really think that, you know, if this government believes that it has some kind of mandate from the people, it's sorely mistaken.
And that we did have a referendum on the voting system, didn't we?
We did. We
yeah.
did. And that's the most disappointing thing of all, I think, is that people got I think, you know, people were given an opportunity to really fundamentally change things. I believe it's more of a cultural problem with our system more than anything else. There's nothing really preventing MLAs from actually standing up on behalf of their constituents or their own conscience. There's nothing to say they can do that under our present system. But, you know, British Columbia has voted to reject a change to that system that might have shaken things up, that might have made it possible to have some change in that culture. And I must say I'm really disappointed. I'm personally disappointed that they didn't take that opportunity. And I think, you know, a lot of it had to do with the ineffectiveness of the Yes Sides campaign and the effectiveness of the No Sides campaign. Canadians are not politically conservative, but a pretty conservative people. We don't like change. We don't do change very well. And I think there was enough fear out there, fear of change, that got in the way of what could have been a historic opportunity.
Now, Jessica McDonald, she's the she's now the former deputy minister to Gordon Campbell. She's left. What does that mean? Like to us, the regular citizen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's a really good question, because, you know, the talk in the hallway at the time was, well, you know, we're all interested in it, i.e. the reporters. Is really anyone else interested in it? And I do, you know, and just, this is a little bit of a tangent, I do work all the time where these kind of stories made the front pages of newspapers. I say recall a time, well, that was when I was very young, but I can see it in the newspaper archives, right, mm-hmm. where these kind of stories got a lot of play. So what does it mean that the premier's top bureaucrat has left? Well, to a certain extent, you know, being the top bureaucrat, she's a creature of Gordon Campbell, right? Reflects Gordon Campbell's tendencies, reflects Gordon Campbell's approach. The rap on Miss McDonald was the fact that she was a micromanager who was in over her head, and, you know, justifying that, those critics would say, well, look at the fact that she didn't really have a lot of senior management experience before moving into that job. Does her change have any effect, though, getting back to your original question? I don't necessarily think so. Gordon Campbell is who Gordon Campbell is, and his approach isn't going to change, which means it's unlikely the approach of government as a whole is actually going to change. Could his deputy minister, if he took a different approach, be a moderating force? Possibly, but you got to remember that things have been run in this particular way for a very long time in this government, and I think it's finally catching up to them.
Now, the legislature is not sitting this week. It comes back next week, does it?
It does, yes.
What's something in this fall session that we should be paying attention to that you're looking at?
Well, I look at things differently than most people do. I think, you know, what's going on outside the legislature is probably more interesting than what's going on in the legislature. If I was to point to one thing that could sort of have larger ramifications, it would be what's happening with the NDP, what's going to happen at their upcoming convention, which takes place in November. Are we going to see some expression of dissent with the current leadership of the NDP? Are we going to see any kind of public airing of grievances against Carol James? I think that is going to be, you know, interesting sort of at a larger level. We won't really have an opportunity to see whether or not Liberals feel the same way. You hear things, you know, in the back rooms, but the Liberal Party is much more tightly controlled than the NDP is, so it's very difficult getting at those kind of complaints when we hear about them.
Hey, what's on the show Sunday on CFAX?
That is a good question. I have yet to book it, so being the busy guy that I am, sometimes I leave these assignments at the last minute, like I tell my students not to. But I will be on Voice of BC tonight, Thursday, so I'm going to be spending most of the rest of my day preparing to go on with the two Seans, Sean Leslie and myself, with Vaughn Palmer, so that should be interesting.
We'll be watching tonight, and we'll be listening on Sunday. Sean, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
No, thanks very much. It's always a pleasure, Joe.
You're very welcome. Sean Holman Online, the website, publiceyeonline.com. If you can support the site, I suggest you do. Sean does very fine work, work that you won't read anywhere else. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.